is VSiN Prime Time. Live from the Circus Sportsbook in downtown Las Vegas on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, the Yankees have a rally going. Runners on first and third, one out. Yankees lead the Orioles 3-2. Bottom of the fifth, Austin Wells at the plate. Will Hill, are you excited? Do you sense the Yankees are about to add to their lead?
Excited might be a strong word, but I'm cautiously optimistic here. Man on the corners. As we know, Yankees, when they get a man on third, less than two outs, they don't exactly thrive in these situational spots. Just get them over, get them in. That's not their strength. It's typically just sit around and wait for the three-run homer. But in good shape here. Would like to add on a couple runs. Luke Weaver reinstated from the IL. So I remember he got hurt the game you were out, because we talked about it. They pitched him in like an 18-2 game, and the next day they said he was hurt. And it was like, when did he really get hurt? How did he get hurt warming up? It was supposed to be like a 4 to 6 week injury plus, and he's been back. It's only been 2.5, 3 weeks. I think 3 weeks ago was that Dodger series. So Weaver is back tonight. We'll see how they handle the bullpen if it comes to that. But hopefully the Yankees can blow it open here and not be in a position where they have a save situation later. But a big spot here for Wells looking to bust it open.
Yeah, just to briefly rewind what happened there. The Dodgers beat the Yankees 18-2 on a Saturday. That was the score, right?
And sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, I believe Luke Weaver was put in the game when it was something like 14-2. And I said to you, why the hell is Luke Weaver pitching? And as we're speaking about that, Austin Wells hits into a double play, and the Yankees do not score. Nice job. Runner on third, one out, hit right into a tailor-made double play. Anyway, the Luke Weaver situation was odd to me because I was in L.A. and I was going to go to the Sunday game, and I said, why is Weaver pitching in a 14-2 game? This is ridiculous. And the next day, the Yankees report, oh, Weaver's injured. Warming up in the bullpen on Sunday before the game. I said, BS. That's BS. Well, I'm not taking anything for face value. He was probably injured pitching in the 14-2 game, and the Yankees don't want it to be known that he was injured pitching in a useless spot on Saturday, so they're going to say he was injured on Sunday when he was just throwing in the bullpen. Anyway, it didn't make any sense that he was used in that Saturday blowout game, and that he's been out ever since. Well, the Yankees have managed to overcome the absence of their closer, mostly because they have not been scoring, and they lost six games in a row. When you lose six in a row, you don't need your closer. But tonight, the Yankees might need a closer with a 3-2 lead here going to the sixth inning. Anyway, speaking of the Dodgers, they took 2 of 3 from the Yankees in that series a couple of weeks ago. Dodgers tonight put Clayton Kershaw on the mound. We got lefties Mackenzie Gore and Clayton Kershaw going head-to-head. This game starts in about 1 hour at Chavez Ravine, and Dodgers minus 175, total of 8, after the Dodgers just took 3 out of 4 games against the Padres. Clayton Kershaw has made 6 starts. Only one qualifies as a quality start, but he has not pitched that poorly. 27 2/3 innings. Has allowed 10 earned runs, 2 homers. He's actually got Kershaw in those 27 innings, only 20 strikeouts. He's not the same strikeout pitcher he was before, but his whip at 130, ERA at 325, and his first start was really shaky. Since then, he's settled down a little bit. Will, can you trust Clayton Kershaw in a spot like this tonight? Definitely have the better team in the Dodgers. The Nationals have been playing really bad baseball lately. Minus 175. What do you think here?
You said it. You summarized it, and I thought handicapped it pretty well. After a disastrous first start, Kershaw settled in, pitched respectably. Gore is a guy we know, he's got a lot of talent. I'll say this. If you're going to play the Nationals, you almost have to do it in some form of the first five, because their bullpen is a disaster. And if it's once you get to the sixth, seventh, eighth inning, the Dodgers can really put up a bunch of runs. So maybe it's a live betting opportunity. I can't quite get there with the Nats. I don't know that I want to lay this price with the Dodgers, even as like a parlay piece or anything. I passed the game. I have some regret. You mentioned the game last night. We were sitting here talking about how Dodgers at minus 280 probably shouldn't be favored that much. Yamamoto in recent form hasn't been great, and they lose 5-0. They're never in the game. I think 5-0 was the score. So missed opportunity on a nice live dog there with the Padres.
Yep.
I don't know. Nationals plus a run and a half, maybe plus a half in the first five, if anything, but nothing I've played. I think this line is probably properly priced. Does that make sense? Anything you're looking at here?
Dodgers even look a little bit cheap to me. And I know that coming off that series against the Padres, with all the things that happened last night, this might not be the best spot to play the Dodgers. I just don't have enough faith in Kershaw. It'd be one of those spots where if you're looking for action on baseball and you're putting a parlay together, maybe throw the Dodgers on it. Just as the Nationals have been so bad, it's got roughed up by the Rockies. I do like Mackenzie Gore a little bit, but that's going to be a pass for me at that price tonight. And 190 looks like the high on the screen. I'm watching the Orioles-Yankees game as we talk about this, and Cal Ripken is sitting in the first row behind home plate tonight. Will, do we have time to tell the story about Cal Ripken, the streak, and Kevin Costner?
I don't think I know this, so go ahead. I think we have time.
No, we're not going to do that tonight. You don't know the story?
Okay.
You don't know it?
I vaguely think that you mention it, I remember something. And if I'm remembering correctly, it's probably not one we're going to be sharing on the air. Maybe go to VEASAN.com, get the plus, plus, plus subscription. But we can kind of hint at it.
I thought you would catch on to that. Yeah, we're not going to tell the story on the air. That was the joke. But I thought you knew the story. You know most of the details of the story, right?
Vaguely. Again, okay. I think you told me this once a while ago. But we'll huddle up during the break.
Half the audience right now probably knows what I'm talking about. The other half is, what's the story? Let's hear the story.
They're Googling
anyway.
It. They're probably Googling
it. You'll find it if you Google it. All right, let's go to Astros and Angels tonight. Kikuchi's going for the Angels, and they are home dogs. Astros are minus 170, total of 8. And also West Sacramento A's tonight at home with Springs on the mound against Bibee. And A's, home underdogs, as they usually are. Guardians are minus 120, total of 9. Anything for you in the Astros-Angels or Guardians-A's games?
Angels have played pretty well here, but this looks pretty cheap for the Astros. Not that I love being in the habit of laying $1.60, $1.70, but they strike out a lot against righties. Hunter Brown has been outstanding, short of Skubal and Skeens and really elite guy. I mean, he's been about as good as anyone here. If he continues to pitch like this, he's talking about like a top three Cy Young candidate. He's been outstanding to me. And the Astros hit lefties. Astros have very good numbers against lefties. So to me, I think this is actually a playable price. I'll give that out as a play on the Astros. As far as A's, Guardians, I don't love playing an under in that building, but Bibee's a good pitcher. Cleveland can't hit lefties. It'd be under first five or nothing, but nothing I bet.
All right, two more games on the West Coast tonight, one in San Diego. And I would guess, I haven't seen the lineup yet, but I would guess Fernando Tatis Jr. is not going to be in it for the Padres tonight after he got hit and needed x-rays in the last game against the Dodgers last night. Nick Pivetta gets to start. Lorenzen goes for the Royals to start the weekend series. Kansas City, San Diego, Pivetta, minus 160, total of 7.5 at Petco Park. That should be a good series this weekend. And our game of the night, Boston, San Francisco, Dobbins against Birdsong, but it's mostly about Rafael Devers. His first game for the Giants against the Red Sox, San Francisco minus 125, total of 7.5. How about Royals, Padres, or Red Sox, Giants? Anything for you?
Padres, that's appealing. Pivetta is better than Lorenzen. Royals can't really hit. Outside of Witt and Caglione, a couple homers the other day, that's not a great Royals lineup. Padres, for all of those names that you know, they haven't swung the bats great either. Under or nothing. Padres are nothing. Again, I haven't bet it. I understand the price there. So I passed that. I'm sorry. What was the other game? What was the second one?
Our game of the night, Red Sox Giants.
Oh, game
San
of the night.
San Francisco.
That's one I like the under. Pitcher's ballpark. You know, Boston without Devers, those are young guys that haven't really come into their own yet. Giants struggle on offense. Again, I like Birdsong stuff. To me, I could see like a 3-2, 4-3 type of game. I hate playing full game unders because of the bullpens and the ghost runner, but a first five under four, I think, is a solid play there. I think both those teams can struggle to score runs, especially in that ballpark.
Hey, the Mets have tied up the Phillies at 2. So if you grabbed an underdog price live with the Mets, you're in a much better shape here. Now it's basically a pick'em game. Phillies slight favorites in that one. Yankees are up 3-2, but the Orioles have runners on first and second here with one out. The Yankees at DraftKings minus 324. And as I say that, the screen flashes and goes blank. And the Orioles have tied the game. So that minus 324 disappears. Is now minus 150. as we have a flare single into center field and a tie game at three. And that's why that live number just dropped from 324 to minus 150 on the Yankees. Tied at three. And now runners on first and second with one out. And the Orioles got a chance to take the lead here, top of the sixth tonight. So Max Fried, pretty good. But again, not great tonight, Will. And again, you know, we talked about to open the show tonight. Fried was fantastic to start the year. And that's the type of the pitching standards hard to live up to throughout the season. And we're seeing him tail off a little bit here in the last, four or five starts.
We have, and we've seen the Yankees squander a bunch of opportunities. Bases loaded in the first, a run in, nobody out, only get another run. First and third, one out last inning. They had man on, you know, first and second, nobody out, didn't score. It's like when you keep driving the ball in football and you go down to the 5, the 10, and you keep kicking field goals, those usually come back to bite you. You can't leave this many runners on. It's usually a bad omen for things to come here.
Max Fried roughed up by the Dodgers a few weeks ago on a Friday night. Now he's got to work out of trouble here. If you're looking for a more exciting way to bet, it's called Xcutta. That's spelled X-C-U-T-T-A, and it's the future of futures wagering. It combines the adrenaline of a live auction with the strategy of sports betting or fantasy picks. It's easy to use, and it works for any sport. Over 1,000 teams, players, golfers, and drivers. Xcutta is adaptable to any sport, even horse racing, and it's free to sign up. You pick who you want to bet on, customize your own auction, set your winnings, and invite your friends to play. You can even create auctions for free. Xcutta has free auctions every day at 3, 6, and 9 p.m. Eastern time. Send an email to support@xcutta.com. Mention VSIN, and they give you a 3-month player promo code to get started. Xcutta is a sports Calcutta. Again, that's Xcutta, X-C-U-T-T-A. All right, there's going to be an NBA Finals Game 7 on Sunday night, and we're excited about it. It's great to have a NBA Finals go the distance for the first time since 2016. And to help break the game down tonight, Sam Chowdhury of FTM Network joins us now for the numbers. Sam, thanks for jumping on. Have you enjoyed the series, and did you expect it to be the type of series that might go 6 or 7 games when it started?
Not at all. I mean, I would have told you that it would have most likely swept, you know, then go to game 7. My prediction was OKC in 5. And, you know, honestly, I feel like just going into every game, no matter what Indiana does, I'm always looking at OKC. And then, I mean, time and time and again, I mean, this team continues to surprise me. And, yeah, I mean, I can't be more excited for game 7. Definitely shocked. I wouldn't think we'd be here. I mean, going back to the start of the finals.
Yeah, a lot of people surprised by this, and the Pacers, big dogs in every game. 7.5-point dogs on Sunday night. Pacers in OKC trying to steal a championship, and we're breaking it down here with Sam Chowdhury, live from Cincinnati tonight, home of the Skyline Chili Dogs. Sam, so what are you looking at first and foremost as when you handicap, how do you think the game's going to play out? What are your best bets here on player props or anything you're looking to play Sunday night?
Yeah, I'm sort of staying away from the side, so definitely hammering the props. And I do think that as soon as you get the opening line, it's the best time to grab them if you have a pretty good gauge of this series. The first one I'm going to go with is Aaron Nesmith over 1.5 threes. I'm pretty surprised that we get this number at minus 130. This was a line that I was looking at right away from the last game. Number one, I had no idea what Tyrese Halliburton's status was, so I definitely wanted to back some of the Indy role guys, expecting an uptick in scoring, you know, from everyone else. But you look at Nesmith just in the playoffs, he's been phenomenal. Obviously on the defensive end, more known for his defense. But as far as three-pointers go, he's over this line in 15 out of 22 games this postseason. That's 73% hit rate. He's averaging 2.7 threes on 5.4 shots behind the arc. And then you look at it in this series alone, he's hit at least 2 threes and 5 out of 6 games. The one time he missed was back in game 3 when he only played 22 minutes and he ended up fouling out that game. So, again, I'm pretty shocked that we're getting this number at minus 130. I mean, the best I could find last game was around minus 185 to minus 190. It was essentially unplayable, and he cruised over it. So I really like grabbing it here. Again, like I said, over in 5 out of 6 this series, the one time he missed, he only played 22 minutes. And as great as OKC's defense is, the three-pointer, defending the three-pointer is definitely where they do struggle. especially at the perimeter. They allowed the fifth most threes to opposing small forwards. So I do think Nesmith is going to continue to chuck, and 1.5 is just such a low number for him. And then let's honestly, why don't we just stick on? Sorry, what was that?
No, I was just gonna. I was gonna let you continue. I was just kind of trying to get your thoughts on the OKC side of the adjustments, but please continue.
Yeah, honestly, on the OKC side, I really don't think they're going to change anything because, like I said, they've been weak at defending the perimeter three, and I think that's just more of their defensive scheme. They're okay allowing the perimeter to be open, and Nesmith has torched them there, so I don't really see any adjustment there, especially in Game 7. How much more can you adjust? But sticking on the Pacers side, I do like shorting Andrew Nembhard here, coming off a pretty decent game in Game 6, but this is another one that I'm kind of surprised that we're getting a 9.5 field goals attempted line. You look at him overall on the season, including the regular season, he's under this line in 64% of games overall. His scoring has gone up in the playoffs, but still, he's only averaging 9.7 field goal attempts. So he's hovering at that line. But you look at it in this series, it's sort of the opposite of Nesmith. He's under this line in 5 out of 6 games. He only went over in Game 1, but he's still averaging only 8 field goal attempts per game. Even in Game 6 last night, he attempted 5 3-pointers and still went under this line. That, again, that was a game where Halliburton was limited, played less than 25 minutes. So I don't think Halliburton's going to be completely healthy, but I do think we're going to see him more than we did last night. And again, Nembhard hasn't really been close to this line. So again, he's another guy I like shorting. And I do think it's sort of correlated with Nesmith, you know, expecting less shot for Nembhard, more for Nesmith there.
How about the total? Game 1, 231.5. Just 2 weeks later here, we're down to 215, 215.5. Too much of an adjustment? Too low? What are your thoughts here on the over-under?
Yeah, I don't have a really strong lean on it. You know, if I were to pick one, I would probably say over just because it's such a massive massive adjustment. But then again, I do think ideally that OKC would like to slow down the pace of this game. And I mean, I do expect, it's not a hot take, I do expect OKC to win this game. And again, I think they're going to win it on defense. So don't have a strong lean, but if I were to pick a side, I would say over just because of what we've seen for the most part. I mean, Indiana's offense can get hot, but yeah, no real strong play there.
All right. Forget the spread, the total. Go ahead.
Sorry, what was that?
No, I was just going to ask you who you think wins the game.
I'm going to go with OKC, but honestly, I mean, I've said OKC every game, and I've been proven wrong, you know, 3 times. So don't feel confident there. But yeah, that's why I'm really just sticking to the props. But there is a guy on OKC that I do want to back coming off of a terrible game last time or last night. And it's Jalen Williams in the first quarter. I like going 5+ first quarter points. It's an alternate line. You look at him the last 3 games, and the last 3 games specifically, which is where Hardenstein was back in the starting lineup, he's averaging 8.3 points, taking 6.7 field goal attempts in the first quarter. So again, a terrible shooting night. He was a game worse, minus 40 on the game. Actually, that was a career worst. So I do think it's a good bounce back spot for him, but rather than taking the full game, I want to go to the first quarter. Again, like I said, with Hardenstein in the lineup, he has at least 6 in all 3 games, including last night. He ended the night with 16, but again, still got 6 in the first quarter.
Jalen Williams, 16 points last night. Sam Chattery with us, betting analyst for FTM Network, talking about Game 7, Pacers at Thunder, Sunday night in Oklahoma City. Scott Foster on the crew to call the game. How about Shai Gilgeous-Alexander for the Thunder, Sam? What do you expect from him? I think he's going to make a parade to the free throw line on Sunday night. He had 21 points in Game 6, 7-for-8 at the line. I would expect him to shoot 10 or more free throws Sunday night. How have you been approaching his props throughout the series? His points prop, 33.5.
Yeah, so he's actually another guy that I've been looking at this line for a while. So I actually last night had his over 6.5 first quarter points, which was at plus money. And I mean, let me tell you, it was the most tilting thing to watch. I think there was probably 30 seconds left, and he was at 5 points, and he couldn't buy a bucket. I think he was 1-for-6 in the first quarter. And like you said, he fortunately got to the free throw line. He missed one, and then just barely went over. So you can get the 7.5 in the first quarter. You can find that at plus money. I think that's one that I'm still going back and forth on, just because, like I said, he barely got there, but it was a terrible shooting performance in the first quarter. So he's definitely been a lot better at home. The whole OKC team has been a lot better at home. So that is one that I kind of have a lean on. But then again, I don't want to double down on two OKC guys in the first quarter. His assist one, his assist and rebounds and assists, another one that I've been looking at. I mean, last night, I think he had 2 or 3 assists, but now you're getting about a 5.5-point assist line. You got to pay a lot of juice, which is why I don't love it. So either assist or rebound assist are the two that I'm looking at, just because it's such an outlier number from what we've seen throughout the postseason. Normally, you see this at 12.5. At some spots in the Denver series, you'd see it at 13.5. So I do think it could be a buy low spot, but I think I'd be looking at that before the points. But, you know, 33.5, it's still lower than what we just saw the last two games. I want to say it was 34.5 to 35.5 the last two games. So I think that's all right. But again, I think I'd rather look at the rebounds and assists for him.
All right. Makes sense. That's Sam Chowdhury from Cincinnati, home of the Reds, the Bearcats, River Downs Racetrack, and Skyline Chili Dogs. Which one would you rank number one of those four, Sam?
I am a former Bearcat, so kind of biased, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. You can't go wrong with Skyline, so it's between Bearcats and Skyline. It's a tough one.
Good answer. Sam, appreciate the time, and best of luck on your props in Game 7.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Thanks, Chowdhury, betting analyst, FTM Network. And Will Hill, how about Pascal Siakam, his points prop at 20.5? He had been consistently going over that number. Last night, 16 points and 13 rebounds. Of course, didn't need to do much in the second half. You got to think, if the Pacers pulled the upset Sunday night, Siakam's got to have a big game, right?
You do, but remember with these player props, you got to line it up with your handicap of the game, mm-hmm. and with the total lower and it being a Game 7,
yep.
title on the line, a lot of pressure, a lot of nerves. You figure less scoring. There's a trickle-down effect to all these players with their stats.
That's a great point. I'm not playing it over, but I think Siakam is the one guy who's got to have a big game. Siakam, I'm going to go with McConnell again. TJ McConnell and Pascal Siakam are going to have to be the spark plugs for the Pacers. Not sure if you can count on Tyrese Halliburton or not in Game 7 on Sunday night. All right, quick break. Will Hill and I come back and talk some more baseball. Orioles and Yankees tied at 3, bottom of the 6th. Cal Ripken watching the game in the first row behind home plate.
This is VSiN Primetime on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Jackson Holliday at the plate for the Orioles. You look just over his shoulder, a little bit to the left. You see Cal Ripken in the first row. I do not see Kevin Costner at the ballpark tonight. Orioles and Yankees tied at 3, top of the 7th. Will Hill, I know you're starting to get aggravated by the Yankees here. It looks like they've got a rally going. The rally dies. Same thing the next inning. You can't be losing home games to the Angels and the Orioles, but that's what the Yankees are working on right now.
Yeah, but I'm a patient guy, and I don't let this stuff bother me. So whatever happens, happens, and I'm not going to get too worked up about it.
So what bets do you have on the Yankees in terms of futures? Win total to win the division? How many bets do you have on the Yankees here?
I have Fried 35-1 to lead the league in wins. These are ones you got to get. You have a lead. It's just, man, that's one that gets away. Mm-hmm. 3-1 to win the AL, 7-1 to win the whole thing. Under 93.5 wins, under 95.5 wins, and over 88.5 wins. So I've got some nice bets. I'd like to get all of them home, to be honest, but we'll see. And got some pretty good numbers, and we'll see how it plays out. That losing streak was actually good for my middle because they were trending way over the 93.5. So if they can sit somewhere and out, the Bear, Chris Felica, who we had on, I think, Tuesday night, was kind of hitting at the same thing, where if they could just win like 92, 93 type games, that type of season, it'll be good. Because if you were quick to the punch when the news from Gerrit Cole came out, you could have gotten under 93.5. Then that number trickled down with Stanton being hurt, mm-hmm. and their offseason and everything that happened, losing Soto, and you could have played over 88.5, over 89.5. So a nice 5-1 middle in Major League Baseball is a five win middle is a pretty fat middle. So hopefully it can get home. And yeah, that's what we're looking at here. 3-3 in the 7th as Yankees have replaced Fried. It looks like Loaisiga's in for the Yanks.
Yes, this This game is tied at three, top of the seventh, 2-2 count with one out. And Yankees just stopped their six-game losing streak with a win yesterday and trying not to blow it tonight as Blewett warms up in the bullpen for the Orioles as we speak. Will, also tonight, you told me during the break there's some news regarding a no-hitter or two. What's going on here?
We had in Milwaukee, Minnesota, a good pitching matchup, dueling no-hitters between the Brewers and the Twins, Ryan and Mizorowski, as I believe how you pronounce it, the rookie from the Brewers. Ryan gave up a single to lead off the fifth, double play erased that. The Brewers actually scratched a run across earlier on a walk, stolen base, and a couple sack flies, I believe. So it's 1-0 Milwaukee, but Mizorowski has not given up a hit, two outs here in the fifth. And if you remember his first start in the big leagues, he has not given up a hit. So I think he's 9 2/3 innings in the big leagues, second start, and he is through five here. He is still not giving up a hit. And if you watch him, he is the real deal. 6'7", 6'8", big, long, you know, arms, great just frame in terms of a pitcher. And he's throwing the ball 101, 102. He's mm-hmm. got outstanding stuff, and he's really stifling the Twins here. So a 1-0. This is about as good a pitcher's duel as you're going to get. One hit through five innings between the two teams combined. A 1-0 game. I can't imagine. I got to pull up the pitch count here for Mizorowski. I can't imagine they're going to let him go all nine the way they baby these pitchers. But if his pitch count is reasonable, we'll see here how it plays out.
Brewers 1, Twins 0. Joe Mizorowski dealing a great game tonight for the Brewers. I'm checking here the live line at DraftKings. Milwaukee minus 232 with a one-run lead. It seems like a high price there, 232 in the sixth inning. Live number here on the Yankees, tied at three, minus 212 if you feel like the Yankees are going to win this game. And they have an advantage, and that price keeps going up here because the Orioles have two outs here in the top of the seventh and no runners on. D-backs have a 2-1 lead over the Rockies in Colorado. That's Gallen against Gomber. D-backs up one. They are minus 250, and the total is 11.5. You said you mentioned you noticed a total of 12 in that game early today. Is that the highest total you've seen on a baseball game this season?
Yes, haven't seen another 12. It's not completely unusual to see a 12 in Coors Field, just hadn't seen one this year. Part of that is the Rockies, even at home, don't score many runs, but they've been swinging the bats better lately. Arizona can hit. Gowan's been shaky. You add all that up, and you got a 12. I think most places closed 11.5. But yeah, that's about as high. That is as high as I've seen all year. And I think I saw somewhere that was the first 12 we've seen all season. And just to go back to Mizorowski, 63 pitches through five. So I can't imagine, I don't know, you just do the math here. It's going to be hard for him to get through nine with only probably 30 something pitches to work with, four more innings. And I don't think he's allowed a base runner. So I'm trying to see here. No walks, unless there was an error hit by pitch that I'm missing. It looks like he's got a perfect game through five. So hell of a pitching matchup there between the Brewers and the Twins.
Well, if he stays perfect, you got to let him keep going. You can't pull him out of a 1-0 game if he's got a perfect game going. You can't be afraid of letting a guy go 120 pitches, right? What was it?
I'm with you.
I believe it was Andrew Abbott of the Reds who threw a shutout in Cleveland a couple weeks ago. Might have been, about 2 weeks ago, and he threw 110 pitches. People act like 110's a high total. It's really not. You know, he can stretch these guys out for 120, especially if he's got a perfect game going. Braves are down to the Marlins 6-2 in Miami. You know, we just thought we talked about the Mets allowing the Braves back in the race, and this is the type of game you got to win tonight. Braves are down 6-2 and huge underdogs on the live line. Mets-Phillies. It was 2-0 Philadelphia and Zach Wheeler. First time we talked about the game. Now it's 2-2. Mets have tied it up. Money line is Phillies minus 188. That's at DraftKings. If you want to track the live bets, that's a great spot to do it. The live betting lines at the DraftKings on the DraftKings website. A lot of times updated about 30 seconds to a minute before you see things unfold on your TV. And that's what I watch here every night during the show. We're going to take a look at the American League East odds here. Yankees 12 games over 500, minus 250 to win the division. The Rays at 6-1 with the Blue Jays. And the Blue Jays are getting beat up by the White Sox tonight. Red Sox, who are going in San Francisco later tonight. Red Sox are 13-1 to win the division. And the Orioles 180-1. They're out of the race. But you got four horses who have a shot to win this division. Will, if which team is most likely to catch the Yankees if they fade? And are there any of those four teams or any of the other three teams, Rays, Blue Jays, or Red Sox, you would throw out and say, nah, that team doesn't have a shot to win the division?
I think without Devers, it'll be tough for the Red Sox. And you and I think, are aligned on this. Even though we're Yankee fans, we have an immense amount of respect for the Red Sox with their manager. But a lot of that respect and fear of the Red Sox was Devers, because Devers was just own the Yankees, own Gerrit Cole. Seems like you could just mark him down 2-for-4 with a homer every time he goes to Yankee Stadium. You know what? Just turn around and throw the ball in the gap, because that's where it's headed no matter what you do with it. But you don't have to worry about that anymore. I just think they're probably too young. I can understand taking a shot on the Red Sox, but I don't know that that's realistic. Tampa, I guess. Tampa's, man, that's just a good organization. Now, they haven't gotten anything out of Shane McClanahan. Wander Franco, I mean, everything that happened there, I mean, that was a guy who was potential MVP.
Forget about him.
He's probably never playing baseball again. You can forget about him, is right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the Yankees hang on. Tampa would scare me, though.
I think Tampa's always dangerous. Rays are always dangerous. Yes. Did you see the story today that Jeff Bezos is closing in, apparently, on a deal to buy the Rays for $1.75
billion? Wow. I saw that they were selling. I didn't realize he was the buyer. Now, is he going to keep them in Tampa? Because a lot of people think, you know what, that's just not a place for baseball. They don't have a fan base there. They need to stay in that stadium. What they played in was a dump. But you're looking at a team that's in the playoffs. Imagine if they get in the playoffs, make a run, and you're playing like ALCS or World Series games at Steinbrenner Field, a minor league complex. That would be an interesting twist, wouldn't it?
How about if the Yankees played the Rays in the playoffs at Steinbrenner Field, home of the Rays?
Not impossible.
I know. Rays are such a great organization, but it does seem like both franchises in Florida could be moved, right? There's no support for the Marlins, little to no support for the Marlins. Rays have always struggled to draw fans, even though they put a winner on the field every year. I do wonder, when I saw that today, I wonder if Jeff Bezos wants to move that team if he buys it. But anyway, that was a story that popped up today, a bit of a surprise. I'm watching the Brewers-Twins game here. Joe Ryan on the mound for Minnesota. Will, I don't know if you're watching it, but I love these old-school Milwaukee Brewers uniforms and helmets. The Brewers' old-school stuff is classic. I don't know what the Twins are wearing tonight, but that's a disaster. Whatever those uniforms are for the Twins, Brewers look cool as hell. All right, this summer, go all in at Circle Las Vegas with the Ultimate Getaway Package. Just $400 all in. You get a two-night stay at Circa, a $100 dining credit, a $100 beverage credit, and your own day bed at Stadium Swim. All for just $400, resort fees and taxes included. It's a limited-time offer through September 4th. Don't miss out. Lock in your all-in summer package now at CircaLasVegas.com. All right, Will, once again, as we close in on some of these West Coast games starting, Astros have a lead over the Angels, 1-0. I believe you said you had a bet. Did you play something, or you just recommended a bet on this Astros-Angels game?
I played the Astros. That was one where I don't love laying $1.65, $1.70, but Hunter Brown, Astros against a lefty, to me, that was cheap, even though, you know, $1.70 is not something you love laying on a daily basis.
All right, we're going to talk more about NBA Finals Game 7. And coming up at 7 p.m. Pacific, Will Hill and I are going to talk NFL futures. So stay tuned for that. Back here in a couple minutes on VSIN Primetime.
This is VSIN Primetime on VSIN, the sports betting network.
All right, again, all eyes on NBA Finals Game 7 on Sunday night. And the market dropped a little bit today. Last night, the opening number was OKC minus 8.5. And now it's 7.5, pretty much painted across the board. So some respect, some money on the Pacers today. And we're still 2 days away from the game, but I would imagine it's going to close 7.5 or 8. Wouldn't be surprised if it closed 8 at more books. But Will, the total is the one thing. It's a low total for a Game 7, but it's justified when you look at the history of low-scoring Game 7s, right?
It is, and these bookmakers, I hate to say it, but they're getting a little sharper adjusting these numbers. I know for years you could set your clock to it. They basically just copy and paste the Game 6 number, and then the under starts getting bet inevitably because it's a Game 7, and then they have to adjust it manually or go from there. And it ticks down, you get maybe 2-3 points of value, which, you know, maybe doesn't matter all the time, but it matters enough to matter. But they're ahead of it now, where they're adjusting it. I mean, what did 223.5? Is that what it closed in game six? You're talking about a 10-point adjustment. Okay, game six was low scoring, but they are building into this equation here the fact that game seven's trend under, it's being accounted for, and we talk about this all the time. No good trend, no profitable trend lasts forever. Sometimes they last a little while. Sometimes they last a long time. You know, Missouri Valley unders, that's one that seems to at least have endured so far. But for the most part, once word gets out, especially now in this day and age with all this betting shows, Twitter and people tweeting about it, these secrets just don't stay secrets for very long. So the cat's out of the bag. I have a hard time playing under the 214.5, 215 in that range because I just think it's well accounted for. That being said, the under trend is so strong that I'm not dying to play the over too. I do think there'll be some nerves. Scott Foster is an X factor here. Is he going to blow the whistle a million times and he's going to be afraid to the free throw line? It's possible. So long-winded way of saying I don't really have a play on the total. Do you have a play? Do you have a lean here on the total?
I do not. I'm concerned about the game being a foul fest with Scott Foster in charge and OKC making a parade to the free throw line on Sunday night. That's the thing. I would bet on SGA to attempt 10 or more free throws in that game. And that's one thing that concerns me about the total. You mentioned it. When you bet the under, the worst thing that can happen is a bunch of free throw attempts. Points scored with the shot, with the clock stopped. That's the worst thing when you bet an under. And I just got this feeling the officials are going to micromanage that game with Scott Foster reportedly in charge on Sunday night. I can see why the market total has dropped to 214.5. As of right now, I'm not going to play. I did take the Pacers plus 8.5. I took that last night. Again, I've got OKC. I lost a bet and won a bet last night. Obviously, won a bet on the Pacers plus 6.5. Lost a bet on OKC to win the series in six games at plus 450. I've still got OKC to win the series at 5-1 odds. And I've got the Pacers plus 8.5 on Sunday night. Quickly here, before we get to the NBA draft, All the Wrong Moves. That'll be the title of the movie starring Aaron Boone when it's made someday, Will Hill. When Aaron Boone goes to the bullpen, bad things happen. He's got a tendency to make the wrong move more often than not. And he goes to the bullpen and he brings in Luke Weaver. And what happens? Home run to right field. Orioles, 4-3 lead. Were you watching?
I was. Typical Yankee Stadium, just kind of a routine pop-up fly ball to right field. It barely gets over the fence. It barely gets over the outstretched arm of Aaron Judge, but it counts just the same as a 500-footer. Orioles take a 4-3 lead, and the Yankees, you know what, cheap home run or not yet, every opportunity to extend this lead. Bases loaded in the first inning, did minimal damage. First and third, one out in the fifth inning, a chance to expand the lead. Wells hits him double play, so the bad situational baseball, which has played the Yankees for a long time under Aaron Boone, continues here. So they got six outs to make up a run. This would be a bad loss here. Yeah, just goes to show you, I don't like that laugh.
Gary Sanchez just hit a bomb. Sorry to interrupt you. Hit a bomb, and it looked like it twisted foul. So it looked like Sanchez might strike for the second time tonight, but he hit a rocket off Luke Weaver, who doesn't look like he's got much tonight. First game back for Weaver in what, about 3 weeks?
Yeah, was that 3 weeks or 4 weeks ago that Dodgers series? Weeks. But it's been a bit.
Yeah, it's been a while.
And to go back to something we were talking about earlier, Mizorowski does have a perfect game, one out now in the sixth. So this will get very interesting. If he keeps mowing him down, will they leave him out there and let him finish this? Again, long way to go, but also, you know what, sixth inning, one out. It's also not not unfathomable here that he could make a run at this.
3-0 in the sixth, Brewers over the Twins, and one out, Mizorowski at 67 pitches right now. All right, let's talk NBA draft. Next Wednesday night, Tim Murray and I will be hosting the NBA draft special here on VSiN, so tune in for that. Be on the edge of your seat. Anxiously awaiting the number one overall pick by the Dallas Mavericks. Who will it be? Well, it's going to be Cooper Flagg. Right now at DraftKings, Cooper Flagg is minus 20,000 to be the first overall pick. That means you'd have to bet $20,000 to win 100 if you're crazy enough to do that. But sure looks like he's going to be the number one pick. Will, I feel like the NBA draft next week starts at number two. That's where the mystery is. For a long time, it felt like Ace Bailey. It was projected to be Ace Bailey of Rutgers. I had my doubts about that. As somebody who watches a lot of Big Ten basketball, Ace Bailey would not be the number two pick on my board. I looked at DraftKings today, and actually now the number two pick board has shifted. There have been a bunch of reports in the last couple of days about Ace Bailey not doing workouts for certain teams, questions about maybe his maturity. VJ Edgecombe from Baylor is the second choice at 20-1, and Dylan Harper of Rutgers, now the favorite at minus 5,000. Probably, I wish I should have jumped on this earlier. I've always felt like Dylan Harper is the second best player in this draft behind Cooper Flagg. I also like Trey Johnson, the guard from Texas, quite a bit, who I think is going to be a top five pick. Trey Johnson, right now to be a top five pick at DraftKings, minus 450. He is 100-1 to be the second overall pick, which might not be a bad long shot play because Trey Johnson's the type of game he's – I'm not going to say he's Anthony Edwards, but he's got that NBA scorer's mentality. He's got that offensive game where he can score every which way. But loose, Trey Johnson is a I think going to be a legit scorer in the NBA. It wouldn't shock me if he's a number two pick. I think he's definitely a top five pick. Will, who do you like here? I think you like a Duke player other than Cooper Flagg to be a top five pick.
Yeah, I got him the other day, gave him out under 6.5. Now, getting down on this stuff has not been the easiest thing. Mm-hmm. I think you can trace it back to, was it 2022 when Paolo Banchero, you know, Woj dropped the ball and said it wasn't going to be him, then it was him. I think the books lost money there, and they said, you know what? We're not doing this anymore. We're behind on the information. We're getting beat to the punch. We're losing money, so we're just going to take our ball and go home. So it's been hard. These books are just not offering the markets like they used to. But, you know, I think Knipple is a safe bet to go in the top five, top six, just because he's big, he can shoot, he's got a good feel for the game. Hornets, Jazz, Wizards, 4, 5, 6. I think that's the order. Might have mixed it up. I think that is the 4, 5, 6. I can't see him getting past six. So I think he's a pretty good bet. Either Charlotte at 4, Utah at 5. I think he's a good fit, a guy that can contribute right away. It's interesting, the Bailey stuff where he's refusing to work out for the workers. And I totally agree. He would scare the hell out of me. And you could say team success doesn't matter, all that stuff. Markelle Fultz and Ben Simmons were guys, both went first pick in the draft, I think back-to-back years. Neither one made the NCAA tournament. I heard the same stuff. Oh, it doesn't matter. They're going to be great pros. In a situation where the tournament, you get 68 teams in. You're only one of five players. You're supposed to be one of the best players in the country. If you can't get your team in the tournament, that concerns me. Rutgers was very disappointed. I think Bailey is a guy that would scare me. I just don't get why he doesn't want to go to Philly, why he's trying to strong arm his way out of Philly. Is it a situation where he doesn't want to compete for playing time and he's worried his stats will take a hit? Maybe that's it. But, you know, you and I were talking between the break. Is it hard for you to find this stuff in Vegas? You know, are they offering a lot of stuff?
There's
or
nothing.
What's the betting market like out there?
No, there's nothing. There's no NBA draft market in Vegas. You can find something at William Hill Sportsbooks, but basically, you know, where we sit at Circa and other major books where I go around town, nobody cares about the NBA draft at this point. There's nothing up. It's, you know, it's hard enough to get these guys, bookmakers, put up anything on the NFL draft anymore, right? But the NBA draft, just it's a lack of interest as much as anything. The top five picks, Cooper Flagg, Dylan Harper, VJ Edgecombe from Baylor, Trey Johnson from Texas, Con Knipple from Duke. Those look like they're going to be the top six players. Now, Ace Bailey from Rutgers might work his way somewhere in there. Jeremiah Fears, the point guard from Oklahoma, is going to be up there. Is there a player, Will, that you really like in this draft outside the top five you think could be a sleeper? Don't forget, the Greek Freak in the 2013 draft went with the 15th pick.
I've heard whispers that Sewell, the kid from Georgia, could be a fast riser, and don't be shocked if he makes it into the top 10. And Neat Clifford from Colorado State had JVT on the podcast a couple days ago. He likes him as well. That's a program he's familiar with. So try to get an edge. Start your day with an edge and a game plan. VSiN Daily Morning Bets is your first look at the day's betting line. Sharp action and market movement in just 15 minutes. Hosted by VSiN's team and trusted betting experts, the Daily Morning Bets podcast is fast, focused, and built for bettors like you. Listen to VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast wherever you get your podcasts or get it on the VSiN Watch app. VSIN.com, VSiN Daily Morning Bets podcast. We'll be back after this.